Welcome everybody to the best podcast in the world. My name is Nick Tikusek, and with me there is the only, the one and only Don Rado Bosic.
Hello, what's up?
Good morning, everyone. So today we're going to talk about the most important topic in calisthenics ever. How do you like that topic, Rado?
That's actually my favorite topic because it's my strongest body part, I would say. So I'm going to enjoy this one.
And we're not talking about his massive neck. That was pretty stupid. All right, let's start. Let's get it on. Today, we're going to talk about how you actually can develop pretty massive and very strong legs with kind of calisthenics as we drive now. We dive now into this topic. And it's going to be a little bit difficult because we got to be honest with this. It's probably going to get pretty hard to build proper legs and also proper strength of the legs without using any kind of weight.
Yeah. So, yeah, like with calisthenics, I mean, we talked about ways of progressing and complexity. Increasing complexity is a way to do so. But with legs, it's still like, even when you increase complexity of a motion, there are very few movements that are, when done body weight, actually intense enough to provoke a stimulus and cause adaptation. Simply because, I mean, when you look at the leg muscles, they're so big that they actually need a lot of resistance in order to create that stimulus, you know? So sometimes just doing body weight stuff is probably not enough for that.
Absolutely. I mean, you will come to the point where you can do pistol squats and maybe a few pistol squats, and you still think, okay, it's really, really hard to do pistol squats. But actually, when I dive into that, back in the days, I met people like, there was one guy in calisthenics Wetzlar, a calisthenics group that I founded. He did like, I think it was 112 pistol squats on one leg in a competition, which is, it clearly shows you, all right, that guy, I mean, there's of course a reason for that. The mobility was pretty okay-ish, but he was also pretty strong. But he didn't train for that a lot. So he did classic back squats mostly, and that was it, you know. And that's actually the point that we have to point out at that point. Pistol squats is the exercise everybody talks about when it comes to training the calisthenics and training legs with calisthenics. And for me, it's just another exercise. It's not that hard at all. You just have to push body weight. It's not really, really hard. The only hard part is, do you actually have the ankle mobility to drive your knees forward enough so that you don't fall? And of course, the balance part. But in the end, that's not so hard. So you will come to the point where you learn the pistol squat, and then you get to the point where you do more than 15 on one leg. And that's actually the point where you have to start thinking of, okay, how can I make that exercise harder? And usually the pistol squat is not the best exercise. I mean, you really have to drive the knees very much forward usually. So that also is always a little bit more in danger of hurting your knee, just not because it's a bad exercise or something, but because a lot of people just get into the very end of their range of motion. And in the end of their range of motion, people are not so safe and secure usually, which actually leads to that problem most of the time. So we really have to say, okay, it's a good exercise, it's great, but it's not the best exercise ever to do. So
yeah, it's like, it's always been called like the holy grail of building big legs in calisthenics, you know. Like, it's the first go-to movement if someone asks, what exercise should I do if I don't have any weights at my disposal? everyone's first answer is always like, go and do pistol squats, you know? And it's obviously not probably the best choice exactly because of the reasons you noted now.
I think what is also very important to tell here, especially when hypertrophy and building muscles in the legs, another thing is everybody is about jumps. And I would say, yeah, that's kind of a good thing. But on the other hand, I wouldn't say so. I mean, explosive stuff is not the stuff that really builds legs. Because when you look at the key drivers for hypertrophy, that would be mechanical tension, which is not given, or kind of time under tension, which is also kind of a driver of it, which you need for metabolic stress here. And both are not given.
Exactly. You don't have any of those there. No?
So
yeah.
Jumps are not the best stuff. I mean, you can make legs tired, and that's a good thing. But for building legs, if you have nothing at all, it's better to do that than nothing. I have to say that because especially when the first lockdown came up, we had some clients who, of course, had no equipment at all. And I had to make them do that stuff because, of course, we train legs. Because for me, there would never come up a reason why I don't train legs, because that's, for me, that's a human thing to be able to move my body on my legs, you know. that's unbelievably important to me. But that's also coming from the point, I'm a little bit biased. I'm from the army, and for me it was always important to have strong legs because you just have to walk a lot and carry comrades and all that stuff. So that was always for me a little bit more into that direction. So a lot of calisthenics people are a little bit more into this, yeah, but I want to do all the levers and all that stuff. Yeah, probably you don't train that much legs then, of course. Yeah, I do get the idea. I would never think that way. Not at all.
I mean, yeah, we have a podcast episode on that. Absolutely. Which is long enough with plenty of information, and
absolutely
there are any yeah misconceptions or thoughts about it, go check it out.
Yes, absolutely. To go back into the topic, how to build actually big legs, I would say we gotta start with what we already mentioned a little bit. What are the main things that we actually need? And this is, on the one hand, we need definitely mechanical stress, which should be something pretty heavy, probably. And for that, we really have to say, if a pistol squat is hard to you, that's mechanical stress to your body right now. But you will adapt to that, and you will get stronger over time. And then will come the time where you definitely need more than that. And of course, another key driver, and I would say that's something that's really, really important from my point of view, because Rado, if you remember how skinny your legs have been before we started working with each other and how your legs developed after, I don't know, a year or something, that was crazy. Just because you had much more volume on the legs. And I would say, from just that, that's my personal view on that. To build proper legs, you need a good amount of volume.
That's true. Yeah. Before we started working, I mean, I was training legs relatively heavy in relation to my one rep max, but just like it was based off of maybe one top two exercises, you know, not more than that. And like, it was really a shock for me in a way when I like initially got into coaching and like I see, okay, three or four exercises in a day for the legs, or a full blown leg day is something that I wasn't quite used to. Like in a matter of a few months, my legs have just exploded because of that. And just like, this is like I mean, it's an anecdotal experience, of course, but for me, it has worked. And volume is, of course, one of the key drivers for hypertrophy, which is really important for us now.
And of course, it's an anecdotal note, but I've got to say, I saw this with so many people.
Yeah.
When you up the volume up to like 3 to 4 exercises per day by at least 3 sets per exercise, then usually people are having like, let's say 12 sets up to 16 or something per, for the legs on that given day, and they usually explode. And when you do that twice a week, you're usually pretty good to go at that point. That's straightforward to say so, but it works very well. And from there on, you will see, start off with 12 sets and see where it takes you. But what is also pretty important is to say, when we build up legs, we of course have to think of what parts of the legs do we actually need to develop. And this is where exercise selection gets very important at that point. And of course, also the execution of the exercises, which is something that we always teach our clients pretty much into detail, because even a lunge can be done in different variations so that you just target different muscles in there. And that's pretty important to say in the beginning too, because when I say, yeah, do some squats, do some lunges, and maybe some very isolated exercises like sissy squats, then you're good to go. Yes, you're good to go, but on the same side, it could be that you have to do a different approach to the lunges, a different approach to the squats to really target the right muscle here. And that's very important to say. I can't really say this is the way how you do it, because that's very individual how that actually works for you the best. And this is crucial at that point, that you really know what to do and how to do what you are doing.
Exactly. So execution and how you position yourself within an exercise can just change and shift the focus from being primarily dominant in one muscle group to another one.
Yeah.
And this is something that we can definitely like discuss throughout like the muscle groups that we will go through now.
Yeah, absolutely. So for the beginning, I would always say, let's say we're going to start off with the exercises that are a little bit more into the direction of calisthenics. And later on, we're going to add on some stuff which might not be so much calisthenics-like, but stuff like deadlifts should be in a good proper leg program. It should be in there. I know that's absolutely not calisthenics, but it makes absolutely sense to do so. So my main exercises that I would recommend at least doing would be squats and Nordic curls. For me, the Nordic curl is definitely like, I don't know, let's say the front lever or planche of the lower body. It's a pretty hard exercise for most people. And of course, you can do stuff like that also weighted later on. Take a 5 kg plate, take a 10 kg plate. I've seen people doing it one legged. There was one, I think it was an Italian crazy guy that I saw somewhere on Instagram. I think Dennis showed me that one. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I think exactly. I think I saw the same guy. I think he was also doing it like on a deficit.
Yeah, yeah.
So actually one leg deficit Nordic curls, like what the hell?
And I think he even did it weighted one leg deficit. That was really like the most crazy shit I've seen on an Nordic curl so far. props to that guy. If you're listening to that, please reach out to me. I would love to have you on the show. Let's talk about
Nordic curls. Teach us. Yeah.
So to me, that would be the two, let's call it the main lifts that I would do based on doing mostly calisthenics. So later on, please.
Yeah, I'm sorry. For the back squat, would you do it loaded or how would you do it?
Of course, back squats loaded. Not an air squat.
Not air squats.
No.
Back squats. So, yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I would always go for that. As you know, the thing here that we have to keep in mind, when it comes to the main lift, that's usually a bilateral movement, you know, not a unilateral. Because with two legs, you can move more weight usually. And this is why I always use it as a main lift, or would use it as a main lift, because we can just load up more mechanical tension, more intensity overall into that. I mean, show me a guy who can do a 100 kg pistol squat. Not a lot of people can do that, but a lot of people can do actually 200 kg squats, which is not because they are so weak, they can't do it on one leg, but the chance for having a technical error on one leg is so much higher, and the risk of getting injured is so much higher. This is why I would always go for bilateral stuff. And the other hand is, of course, you have to load it somehow. And when you do a pistol squat into depth, you usually bend the spine. You have a spine flexion here. And I wouldn't go very intensive with a spine flexion, which is something people like to discuss. But in the end, I would just, if I can avoid it, just avoid it. I mean, why should I? If I can keep a stable spine, I just do it.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, the back squat is like a really efficient position to load the squat pattern in. And it's relatively safe and it's relatively straightforward to progress with. Mm-hmm. It's really hard with the pistol squat to kind of have these 2.5 kilogram, for example, increments, or even 5 kilogram increments, you know, unless you do it with a dumbbell, for example, but then you're also limited in the size of the dumbbell, you know, and later on, once you get really strong, you're like, there are bigger jumps in dumbbells. So the back squat is probably the best like choice that you can have as the main lift, just as you noted.
Absolutely. So, and for me, it doesn't matter if you're doing a high bar or a low bar. It really depends on how you actually are built. It depends on your biomechanics. Of course, you probably, as most of the people, are able to move more weight on the low bar, but it doesn't have to be like that. I have seen so many people who are doing heavy back squats in a high bar position. I've seen so many people who do the low bar position. I don't care at all. It really changes some stuff here. So you can say low bar probably will lead to more, yeah, like glute activation. But on the other hand, when you look at low bar positioning of the hip, a lot of people don't go that low.
Yeah.
When you look into the signs that we have right now, the glutes are working very much in the very bottom position of a squat. So the lower you go, the more glutes you have incorporated into it. And this is actually the reason why this is a little bit difficult to say. Yes, with the low bar squat, you have more glute activation and furthermore, more growth of the glutes. I would always recommend to just do both and you're on the safe side at that point.
Yeah, I think the thing with that is like, high bar usually tends to be an easier variation for people to reach the full ass to grass position and to go really all the way down. And because of that, it's kind of viewed as a quad builder, quote unquote, simply because of that extra range of motion that you get. And the low bar tends to be, I wouldn't say limiting, but people kind of struggle a bit more with it to reach full depth. Mm-hmm. And because of that, it's mostly viewed as like a glute builder and not so much as a quad builder. But like I would say, like they're almost equally the same, you know, when it comes to building quads. It's not like the knee flexion angle is significantly different than either of these.
Yeah.
Look into patterns. So
absolutely. And this is actually the thing here. But on the other hand, we have to say the lower you go, the better you actually also bring in the adductors. And that's a pretty interesting thing because your legs will look a lot better when you have good adductors. Because that's the inside of the legs, you know? And of course, I'm the guy who always tries to find shorts which let me show off my quads very good. I like these shorts. But on the other hand, adductors are also very, very important here to build up a big, big leg at that point. And on the other hand, later on, we're going to also talk about what we also need for that is the hamstrings. Having good hamstrings is, of course, also very important. And the difficult part here is to say that most of the exercises that we are doing on the legs are not like this is a complete isolation exercise. So everybody is like, yeah, do the high bar squat, do the front squat, and you build up more quads. You tend to go a little bit more with the quads here, but it's not like you're not building quads with a low bar, as you already said. It's pretty much the same. Again, depending on how you execute the exercise in the end. When you're doing a good morning and bringing, once you reached 90 degree or something and bringing your knees back and doing everything out of your back to get everything up and using hips mostly, then you're of course not using the quads that much. But that can happen to you in a high bar squat too if your technique is not that good. And that's the big point that we already pointed out in the beginning. Most of that stuff is pretty much about how you actually execute the exercise that you're doing. And of course, that depends a little bit on the biomechanics that you have, but also a lot on the execution that you have.
Yeah. To kind of piggyback on the adductor topic, they work immensely in the squat. Like I think people don't realize how important the adductors are. Especially just as you said, like the closer you get to the bottom position, the more they actually are active. And also like with that execution, how you do the squat, I found out for myself, like I was in the past always trying to push the knees out and trying to go in that fashion down into the squat. And I wasn't really feeling it in the adductors. And when I did a slight switch in execution and just tried to either have my knees track the path of the toes, or maybe even intentionally slightly drive them inside, especially as I come closer to the bottom, that has really helped me kind of feel the adductors and feel the pull of the adductors, which are, you know, active in the bottom and actually pull me in the bottom position. And I'm nice and safe there. And then on the way up, you can definitely use the freedom to then again, drive the knees out and get them in track with the toes. So yeah, like pulling the knees inside of it, having this adduction, of course, which is the function of the adductors, is something that you can use on the squat to maybe target them more if you feel like, okay, my adductors are lacking and I should build them up more.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this is not about bringing the knees in too much.
No, of course, you don't actually. Yeah.
Just a little bit. And we always have that discussion with clients in the beginning, because it's super interesting to talk to them about that stuff. Yeah, but my knees, they shouldn't come in. And I say, yes, they shouldn't come in till a certain degree. It will happen that they move a bit. It will happen because the adductors are working, and that's a good sign, because the adductor magnus is the one that brings you out of the fucking hole down there. That's the one that moves you out there, because it helps you using the hips as an extender. You know, usually that's work of the glutes, but they get the help of the magnus, and that's what we need here. So because the quads are in such a stretched position, they will not be super effective at that point. So everything helps you here. So that's very important to keep in mind that's where I wanted to go with that, that all the muscles are working in stuff like a squat and stuff like that. It's not like also the hemis are working. It's not like they're not working. They are working. And that's super important to keep in mind when it comes to that stuff, especially when it comes to exercise selection. And maybe you wonder why you're tired and in your leg curls when you just did squats, but the squats are just for quads. Nine. That's not true. No. So to go into that, we always have to think of some mechanical stress, which is coming with stuff like the squats, and of course the Nordic curls. But Nordic curls are a little bit different to see, as in the Nordic curls, that's a pretty isolated exercise, I would say. It's not so much quads, it's very less of this of the quads working. So this is a bit of difference to actually the deadlift, which involves the quads a little bit more into the exercise, as the quads are doing knee flexion or extending. They do extend your knee, and while doing a Nordic curl, you're usually just extending the knee while you're in a negative motion, and this is where they don't have to do a lot because gravity is forcing you to come down. And what is happening most of the time is the hamstrings working, pulling you backwards, and doing the flexion of the knee, which is good at that point. And this is actually why the quads are not really working in a Nordic curl.
Not really, like unless you kind of aggressively push the knees against the floor and almost like do this knee flexion motion, some parts of the quad might work slightly, but it's not like anything dominant. It's just like almost passively there.
And also, people tend to, but I also feel it so much in my glutes. Also, the glutes are not really working in there. So they are working as a stabilizer to keep the hip extended, but not really more. It's just more for stabilizing isometric work. So the main work is really done with the hamstrings. So that's why I always say the Nordic curl is a massive hamstring builder, because you're just having such a big angle. And this is why you always have to think of this as something like a little bit like a lever or something, as the lever that is working there is harder, the longer you are. So when you reach out with the hands up there and maybe have a little small plate on your hands here going down, it's massively going to be harder because you just made the lever longer. Got me?
Yeah. I mean, the Nordic curl is incredible. Like I honestly can't think of an exercise which has such a strong eccentric component. And you can almost use it as a mechanical advantage to actually use a longer lever as you come down and have this extreme eccentric phase, which is going to be extremely productive for building muscle. And then on the way up, you can kind of reduce the lever a bit and have the concentric phase if needed. But if you ask me, like for the start, for most people, it's usually enough to just have this eccentric component in there, and they're still going to have the benefit from the Nordic curl.
Absolutely. So to me, those two exercises are the most calisthenics-ish stuff that you can actually do to grow your legs very well. But now we have to bring in some more stuff because, of course, now we have to also talk about what we need as the ingredients. Is that the right word? Yeah, that's it.
Ingredients.
Because we need some more stuff for some metabolic stress. And This is getting super interesting because at that point, we go a little bit more into isolation exercises and try to hit certain muscles in a very, we try to isolate them as much as possible. And here comes in some stuff that is, this is actually the position where I would put a pistol squat in. But even here, I would more go for like lunge stuff, certain lunge variations, like let's say a split squat, maybe walking lunges, or even Bulgarian split squats, a little bit more knees traveling forward or keeping the knee a little bit more over the foot. It depends what you actually want to target here. And this is the stuff where we have to see, okay, what is best for you? What works best for you? Because some people just can't really go with very much knee traveling forward on all the split squat exercises or lunge exercises. So if you can't do it without your knee hurting, yeah, well, then just don't do it. You will still hit the quads, you know? That's a very important one.
Yeah, exactly.
What I would also say is we can still go pretty heavy on split squats, also on Bulgarian split squats, as an expert about that may have some thoughts about it.
Yeah, like if I were in a situation where I don't have any equipment, like the first exercise, my go-to movement would be the Bulgarian split squat. And if that's not intense enough, then you can go up on a deficit and actually have more range of motion by doing so. And if that's not intense enough, then you can increase like the time under tension by doing something like 3 seconds down, 1 second pause, 3 seconds up and repeat, you know, and like doing 12 reps like that, just body weight is probably going to be like more intense than anything else. And it's also a nice metabolic stress way to introduce hypertrophy, you know?
Yeah. And of course, doing that weighted.
Like that's of course the ideal. When it comes to the Bulgarian, I found for myself that like loading it with dumbbells, it's probably the most efficient way to do so because the barbell tends to be like an issue to balance. And that just gets into the way of actually feeling the exercise itself and just executing the movement properly. And with dumbbells, you do have enough room and enough space to progress. And of course, a big plus with that is you're not loading the spine and thus you're not creating this extra fatigue, which might hinder you in other movements. So that's like the perfect setting for a nice metabolic stress stimulus.
Absolutely. Now you mentioned something that we definitely have to bring in here. Fatigue management when it comes to training legs is absolutely crucial for the legs and for the rest of your training. As the more you load, the more you incorporate exercises that load up the spine, the better and the badder it is. Because that's the exercises where your core have to work the most, which I would always recommend because a strong core is always a very healthy thing. On the other hand, this is where the most risk for injury is actually because your core can get so tired and then your whole system gets so tired because your central nervous system always wants to protect your spine. And when everything gets too tired, the whole central nervous system gets so tired that you don't have so much energy or force output in your exercises, which will lead in the end to less stimulus on the legs and of course less stimulus on all the other exercises because the body wants to protect himself and wants to protect the spine. So it doesn't allow you to use more weights because He needs to recover from what you already did to him. So we always have to keep that in balance. I hope I explained that in a way that people may understand it. We always have to keep training load on the spine in a way that you definitely give a stimulus to the core and, of course, to the legs. And on the other hand, it's really getting critical that we actually choose exercises, especially in assistance exercises and accessory work, that are forcing the legs, but not forcing the spine too much, especially for those who are not in touch with any machines and stuff like that. I would usually recommend to have stuff like classic squats and deadlifts before, and later on maybe using some machines if you really have the goal of building thick legs. But for most people who are training calisthenics, it's on the one hand a very bad thing. I don't do machines. But on the other hand, some people just don't have access to machines and have to maybe train in the home gym or in a very functional gym, maybe a CrossFit box or something like that. In our own gym here in Vienna that we are building up right now, we are doing a calisthenics gym right here. we also don't have any machines. We do all the stuff with dumbbells, barbells, bodyweight exercises, and all that stuff. So also when it comes to programming here, choosing the right exercise is extremely crucial, not loading up the spine that much. And for that, we need some exercises that are actually not doing that at all. And for this, I could always recommend some unilateral stuff like you already mentioned, and of course stuff like sissy squats, this stuff, you know. And of course I would love to do some more leg extensions, which is just the quads, but it's just not done without a machine. You just can't. So you have to bring in some more stuff like sissy squats, or maybe even I think you mentioned that in the talk before. What was that exercise that we were talking about?
The heel elevated front squats, goblet squats. Mm-hmm. You think of that, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. Like what you want to do with the sissy squat or with the heel elevated squatting is you want to almost like replicate the motion you have on the leg extension machine, which is exclusively almost having this knee flexion, knee extension. Which is the function of the quad muscle and going into the extreme with that. The sissy squat kind of does that wonderfully because it's almost like the same specific angle when you look at it. And then with the heel elevated squat, what the good thing about that is because you are so upright, you don't really pose so much stress on the back muscles and you don't create so much fatigue. And thus you can load it both in the front squat fashion, goblet squat fashion, or maybe even the back squat fashion. And because you have this heel elevation, you will go into extreme knee flexion, causing the knees to travel forward a lot. And you will work a lot more through the quads with that. And you will find that also you can't load the movement as much as you usually can. Like the heel elevated squat, back squat will be like 100 kilo less than the normal back squat you do, you know, simply because of the sheer level that you have and the muscles being in such a disadvantageous position. So that together with the upright posture, it's probably going to be nothing all too intense when it comes to fatigue in the back. So it's like a perfect solution for it. You don't have to worry about fatigue management all too much then.
And also the reverse Nordic curl as an example.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So just going on the knees, like having the knees and the foot on the floor and just leaning backwards while keeping the hips stable and like in an extended position, and then leaning backwards and pulling yourself forward with the quads would be another very good solution for that, to really bring some stress on the quads. And another thing that we can also have a little thought on would be how do we actually do some stuff for the hamstrings, Adam?
Yeah, so we already mentioned the Nordic curl, which would be like the first exercise and the main movement for the hammies. After that, I would definitely kind of go into the opposite direction, where you actually have the ankles moving and the upper part of the body stationary, which is so the complete opposite to what you have in the Nordic, and thus you will target the completely opposite part of the muscle groups and do something like a leg curl, for example.
Yeah.
And the cool stuff about the leg curl is you can do it easily on rings, and it's like almost the same motion you have on a machine, you know? You can definitely put yourself in a really good stretch position, and you can definitely contract a lot. The thing with that one is, like, a little cue that you want to use is always have the hips up in the air. Don't have them touch the floor. And as you flex the knee, you definitely want to keep extending the hip. So the hip should go up as you do the leg curl. And by doing so, you will have a wonderful hammy builder exercise. And you can always progress in complexity with that. Once you get strong enough on both legs, you can do something like a single leg curl, which is like extremely intense when done body weight, just, you know.
Absolutely. So that's some stuff that we definitely have to bring in here. And now we have to talk about one last topic when it comes to the legs, maybe a bigger one, because we have to talk about glutes. And of course, again, maybe the adductors, because we talked about the importance of the adductors for the squatting, but also we have to talk about how do we actually can train them when we are using mostly free exercises and calisthenics stuff. And the same comes for the glutes.
Should we start off with the glutes or with the adductors?
As you like, bring it on.
Okay. I like the adductor topic quite a lot when it comes to bodyweight exercises. Like, what's interesting is the usual mobility work is, in my view, a really nice way to introduce really like adductor specific work, because it puts the adductor in a really stretched out position, and the stretch is an important facet in the muscle building realm. And it also like is a really intense position for the adductors to hold, even though we might not have like the concentric component in some exercises. Just having this isometric hold is sometimes enough for us to pose a stimulus. So for example, like having pancake work or having middle split work is a nice way to introduce the adductors. Mm-hmm. Because you're being in a stretch, you are holding it in an isometric fashion, and that's enough actually intensity for us to cause a stimulus. Something like the weighted tailor's pose, where you lean against the wall, have the knees on the outside, almost in like a butterfly pose, and you actually do the contraction of the adductors and bring the knees closer to each other. It's almost like the specific motion you have on an adductor machine in a gym, you know? So you have this nice concentric component with that. And another exercise that I quite like is just almost going in a side plank and having one leg up on the bench and pulling yourself down and holding that alignment. That's a nice isometric way. Or you can do that concentrically up and down, contracting the adductor, and you train it in a really, really specific way just by body weight.
Yeah. Another one of my favorite ones would be the Cossack squat.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I love that. Definitely. I think all of our clients had been through the phase where I just wrote down Cossack squats. Do it.
Yeah, like any, like almost any progression towards the middle split or the pancake, like the Cossack squat, the horse stand squat, the straddle good mornings, like everything will be adductor intense, and you definitely tackle them once you implement that.
Absolutely. All right. Can you now bring up the most important topic of the day? Tell us something about how to build a big booty.
Peach boys are in the house. with the glutes, it's really tricky sometimes. Like, we talked about the squat being very glute intense, and that's definitely true. And for most people, like just loading the squats, they will automatically realize, okay, I do have an effect on the glutes just by doing so, and you will definitely see a change. But with the glutes, you definitely want to also introduce some hip extension. I mean, like, the ideal setting would be doing something like a deadlift, you know, but in cases where you don't have the opportunity to do so, like doing hip thrusts or glute bridges on the floor is another way to hit them. It's just that there's usually not enough intensity which the glutes need by doing it on both legs and just body weight. So I would always go for single leg variations. And in most cases, if done properly with proper pauses at the top, like a single leg hip thrust together with some isometrics, it's like a really, really intense motion. And you definitely target the glutes by doing so. And you can also add in some more abductors by thinking of driving your foot out to the outer edge of it and almost like driving the knees more to the outside, especially as you extend. And then you almost have like the full abductor muscle group tackled in one motion.
Yeah, because when we look at glutes, we also have to think of what is actually the most important part. And this is one time the hip extension, which is mostly done with the glute maximus. And then there's also this maybe more like the external rotators part. It's not mainly that, but for most, it's a little bit better to understand. Driving the knees outwards,
yeah,
is actually what really builds up the glute med. And when we incorporate some stuff for both, which is done with squats and deadlifts most of the time. And if you wouldn't really want to incorporate some more stuff, you can also do some sumo deadlifts, which I would always recommend, especially when it comes to the booty building. I would actually, there for the booty, I would recommend like 5 exercises. I would always say go for some squats, go for an RDL, go for a sumo deadlift, which brings in the glute med a little bit more. The squat brings both into that. The RDL brings in the glute max more. And then there comes in some stuff that is highly underrated. And this is actually, you mentioned it before, it's the unilateral stuff that you're doing with stuff like step-ups, Bulgarian split squats, and all that stuff. I mean, everybody who has done a proper set of Bulgarian split squats or step-ups has had massive pain in the ass. The other day.
I feel that. I did them 2 days ago and my ass is fried, like completely fried.
It's super duper crazy how much that actually forces your glutes to work when you unilateral stuff, especially when it comes to stuff where you mainly work with one leg. Also with the pistol squats. When you've done several sets of pistol squats, you also feel the glutes very, very much. So, of course, we have like classic lunges, but that's kind of a little bit bilateral, a little bit more than a Bulgarian split squat and maybe a step up or a pistol squat, because you're still using the other leg a little bit more. But once you really reach the point where you are using mostly one leg, you're going to feel it so hard. It's really, really on that point. And the super interesting stuff, there was actually a study which came out, I think it must have been February in 2020, which checked the muscle activity on several exercises, and the step up beat it every single other exercise on that thing, even more activity than the hip thrust. And that's super interesting because everybody always thought you got to do hip thrusts to build up big leg, a big booty. I'm sorry. I haven't had breakfast yet. I'm getting drained. But so everybody's always like, yeah, we got to do some hip thrusts to really have the glutes working in their function of extending the hip. But it was actually more muscle activation on the step up. Of course, that doesn't mean the hip thrust that exercise to build up a booty. It's still the number one. Because if you look at it from a biomechanical view, it's the only muscle that works at that time, pretty much. So, of course, still the hip thrust is a glute builder.
Yeah.
All right. So I think we really managed to bring up a lot of stuff in here. How would your perfect leg day look like?
Yeah, I would obviously start off with the main work we mentioned, having back squats and Nordic curls in there. Then I would maybe introduce some unilateral work for the quads. Let's say Bulgarian split squats. And I would couple that together with some leg curls. And the reason being is I would have unilateral work before higher rep work for the quads, just because you don't want the fatigue to be too interfering with single leg work. You want to maintain quote unquote stability and just be able to execute the motion. So we have back squats, Nordic curls, Bulgarian split squats, leg curls. Then I would try and go for a higher repetition knee extension motion, something like the sissy squat, or let's say the goblet squat with heel elevation. And later on, I would do some adductor work just so we kind of tackle that and couple that with some hip extension motion, like the hip thrust. And that's pretty much it. I think like these five or six exercises are probably more than enough for you to have a really good leg day if you go intensely with each set and with the intention in it.
That's good. So how would a day look for you if you had the chance of doing some more not so calisthenics stuff, including you are allowed to do deadlifts.
Thank you for this opportunity. Yeah, I would. Depending on what I want to focus on. So I would either have a squatting focus day or a deadlifting focus day. But let's say we have a deadlifting focus day. I would start off with some sumo deadlifts as the first exercise. And not pair that with anything, just straight sets of that. After that, some high bar back squats, because my posterior chain would probably be already quote unquote fried from the sumo deadlifts. And I want to have a bit more focus on the quads and just not have so much fatigue in the posterior chain. After that, I would again do some heavy Bulgarian split squats. And I would couple that together with some unilateral hinging work. So something like a single leg RDL, just so also that motion is tackled. And then after that, bang out some leg extensions and leg curls, and that's probably more than enough. If I have space for it, then I would maybe put in some leg presses or hack squats directly after back squats, just so I kind of get more volume in that pattern. But with these six exercises, I think that most of the time, you're definitely good to go.
I like that.
How about you? Would you do anything differently?
I would pretty much go for that. And I would now add on a second day.
Yeah.
Your first day, maybe leg day, maybe of the week, and bring in the second day, which would start off with maybe some low bar squats, bringing in some RDLs later on, and then bringing in some stuff that might work. Also some unilateral work, because I always like to do unilateral work for the hip stability, and of course a little bit more for some kind of isolation. So it depends a little bit, but we already did the Bulgarian split squats. So I would maybe bring up some step up work at that point.
Yeah.
Doing that in a superset with maybe banded Nordic curls. So just having it a little bit more higher rep, like in a 10 to 12 rep range with bands, so that we have the combined power of the RDLs plus the Nordic curls on that given day that will completely fry your hamstrings for that day. So you don't need to do anything else on that, so that we can easily add on in the end, maybe some stuff more for the adductors, which I would say without any machines, I would actually maybe go for some either Cossack squats or very wide sumo squats. And this is also good because at that point we also bring in the glute med a little bit more, and with the sumo squat stance, so probably go for that. And in the end, maybe something that either brings in more glute work or more quad work. So it could be a single leg hip thrust or a hip thrust, or maybe some CC squats as well. Something like that. So that would be something. Yes. We have like, I don't know, 6 exercises for that given day, which is exactly long enough, hard enough, and gives enough stimulus from all the different angles. And of course, we gotta switch up some different rep ranges for this, which is something where I would say it depends on the periodization that you are in right now, how much you actually are doing, how intense that stuff should be. So I can't really say this is the best one to build up the muscle, because it depends a little bit on where you are right now. Usually I would say with an RPE 8, you're usually good to go. The rep ranges, it should be somewhere in between 6 and 20, depending on the exercise. So I would start off with squats and deadlifts, maybe more in the lower range, and later on, the more isolated the stuff gets, the more I would bring in higher reps. So that would be my thing, and this is actually also the thing how I'm mostly doing it with our clients. So here's the secret for the big legs of the people that we are work with. We just do smart things. That's it. Right. I think that's mostly the stuff right here. So I hope you guys liked this episode. If you did so, please do us the favor and share it on your social media tag us. That would be amazing if you could tag us on that, so we can repost it and all that stuff, so that everybody can share the good message about it a little bit more. And if you have any more further questions, just please feel free to shoot us a message on Strength and Skills Podcast on Instagram. This would be amazing. And at that point, usually I always make some advertisement here. If you need some more muscles on your legs, you're always free to go for our coaching. Strength and Skills is the thing on Instagram. And if you want to shoot us a message there, then you're very, very welcome. If you just want to do it the way that we usually recommend, just go to bar-bellcoaching.de/links. Then you go to our calendar and just choose your appointment and have a little call with us. And then we're going to see how we can actually make your legs grow. All right. Advertisement is at the end. Thank you so much for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed it, and have some good pump in your legs today. Goodbye.